Hello, I'm Rosie Goldsmith, and this is the Commonwealth Writers Podcast, celebrating 10 short story writers from 5 regions of the Commonwealth. We're calling it 10 by 10, which means I've got 10 minutes to talk to each author. Today, I'm here with Ramesh Ganeskara from Sri Lanka. Now, Ramesh is one of the most generous, active, publicly minded, Commonwealth minded writers I know. He may not agree, but he's won a vast hoard of literary prizes too for his fabulous novels and short story collections. Now, Ramesh, you were born in Sri Lanka, you moved later to the Philippines and then to Britain in 1972, and you live here in London now. Now, do you see yourself as a Commonwealth writer?
It's one of those things where I kind of try to see myself as a writer, which is difficult enough. I've written a few books now. I kind of got to the point with the last one, I think, which was the 7th book of fiction. And it reminded me how Chekhov said, you can't call yourself a writer unless you've written at least 7 books. Now, Chekhov was very lucky. He wrote very short ones and managed to put collections together and so on. So that was quite nice. Commonwealth, well, even geography, even countries are slight figments that mean something one day and another thing another day.
You have been involved with Commonwealth writers. I mean, you've been shortlisted as a finalist for a novel and short stories, and you've hosted an event for Commonwealth writers quite recently. So, I mean, you are seen as a Commonwealth writer. Do you think possibly that this constellation of the Commonwealth can work well for the arts?
I think any constellation that provides any kind of support for the arts is a good thing and does help. Writers all over the world, I think, especially when you're starting out, it's difficult to make sense of things. Writing particularly because it isn't naturally a performance, though increasingly people see it in those terms, particularly with YouTube and everything else, but it's essentially a solitary thing, and therefore the idea that anyone is taking any notice, I think, is a good thing. And that's why any kind of literary prize, whether it's the smallest, even if your local baker wants to give a literary prize, I think that's a great thing.
So you think prizes can actually help? I mean, you've been shortlisted for some very important prizes, including the Booker Prize.
I think they do. I think they're very helpful. I think they're sometimes overrated. I don't think we entirely understand. It was very nice to be shortlisted for the Booker. Some people think I won it. It doesn't seem to make any difference, really. But I think, you know, the important prizes are the ones that are actually some of the smaller prizes, which when you're starting out, it just gives a fledgling writer some recognition, some sense that somebody's read something and thought it was good enough to say something.
You've lived in the UK for quite a long time, since you were 17, I think. But you still write about Sri Lanka. So what's going on there? I mean, do you feel that you always have to write about Sri Lanka?
No, I don't. I think when I wrote my first book, Monkfish Moon, I did want to write about Sri Lanka. That was a very specific thing in my head, partly because growing up, I read a lot of all sorts of things. But I didn't read anything set in Sri Lanka. Not because there wasn't anything. It just didn't happen. So it wasn't part of my imaginative world. And therefore, when I came to write a book, I wanted to make that part of my imaginative world. But I thought I did that with the first book. And that was it, really. And I wasn't going to really go back to that, if you like, location or setting. But then, you know, you aren't really in control of everything you write. So the second book, certainly Reef, wasn't intended to be what it turned out to be, but that's the way it turned out to be. But I suppose there are two things. One is, you know, you're not necessarily in control of what you write. You know, you may want to write all sorts of things, but what you end up doing and what works best is what works best at that moment in time. And the other thing is, I do see the world as a fairly small place in which we all live. And as far as I'm concerned, really, Sri Lanka is just at the end of the Piccadilly line.
You said at one point, you know, my desire to understand violence is why you write about Sri Lanka. And it could have been Rwanda or Nazi Germany. So are you writing always in some way about Sri Lanka's problems?
The violence issue is quite... I know, it's an interesting... It kind of emerged. I think that is partly because when my first stories were coming out, in fact, one of my very, very first stories that was ever published, I think, was around about the time 1983, 84, and when violence kind of invaded our lives, as it were, wherever we happened to live. And then violence as a human issue is something that has been growing. I mean, I know there's a strong argument to say that actually, as a species, human beings are becoming less violent. There is something to do with violence and human nature, which is a problem wherever you are and wherever you live and at whatever time. And so that has been something that has emerged in some of the books. But it's not the only thing.
You've written about cricket. You write beautifully about the environment and nature, and but also ethnic identity and language. They all come up in all your books and stories. But do you think you write as a migrant writer? I mean, there is this quote from Salman Rushdie, of course, about migrant writers always writing about or trying to recapture this imaginary homeland. Are you a migrant writer?
Yes, I think most writers are writing about imaginary homelands. And that applies to Jane Austen, to Proust, to anyone, really. And to some extent, all writers are migrants. You know, some move 6,000 miles, some people move, you know, 20 yards. But it's part of that moment of movement and writing and the relationship with the past that the writer has because of language. And in that sense, we are all migrant.
One of the things that you are obviously very sensitive towards and about is language and the use of language in Sri Lanka as well, which, as we know, was a hugely political issue. You know, which language, the Tamil, Sinhala or English. Where do you think the language issue stands now in Sri Lanka? Is it important still?
There are different issues. There is, you know, the issue of English versus other languages is to do with imperialism, with the whole colonial history and so on, which is an important one, and that has changed. I think what's quite interesting is the writing in English has blossomed quite a lot recently in the last, I would say, in the last 20 years. And that has happened really partly because of this issue of, I think, to do with the ownership of language and so on. When I was growing up, I think in the 50s, even in the 60s, though there were English language writers in Sri Lanka or Ceylon as it was then, there was an issue about using this language, English language. And I think there isn't that issue anymore. And therefore, there is a lot of writing going on in English. There's a lot going on in Sinhala and in Tamil. There isn't enough translation going on between the languages.
I find this quite a difficult question to ask. In fact, but do you think that writers should have a political or social responsibility?
Actually, I think the answer is quite simple. I think we all, whether we are writers or not, should have a social and political responsibility. As a writer, your responsibility is very simple, which is not to bore your reader. And your writing is to do with the way you form those sentences in the world that you live in. And to some extent, the way you see the world will affect how you write. So, you know, an Italian writer like Leonardo Sciascia, for example, says, you know, even if it rains, it's a political act in Italy. But I don't believe that, my kind of writing, imaginative fiction, I think has to explore its own ground.
Ramesh, you started off by writing short stories, publishing short stories. How did your love affair with a short story begin?
Yeah, I did start out with short stories for the simple reason because they were short. And I thought I might be able to do them.
I thought you were going to give me a really clever answer there.
and I think also very simply because, you know, I didn't have an idea for a novel when I was young, even later, actually. And, you know, partly I wanted to write stories because it seemed possible to do. I also had the mistaken idea then, I think, that that's the way you learn to write and that you shouldn't write a novel until you know how to tell a story in a short form, which someone might actually finish reading. I think it's a wonderful form. I think the imaginative effort of writing one or reading one is similar to a novel. The pleasures are slightly different, but the imaginative effort is the same. And my most recent book, I've gone back to writing short stories, but I've kind of played around with the idea. So it's a collection of stories, but it could also be read as a novel.
So you're going to read to us a part of your short story from Noontide Toll.